Blog Talk Radio.
Following takes place between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m.
Thank you.
the Grassley Amendment to the Gang of Eight bill simply said we would gain control of the border for 6 months before any other aspect of the bill, which is exactly what we were told. We've been played on this immigration business. We've been played from the beginning.
I mean, this guy needs to be impeached. We impeached Nixon for less than this kind of stuff. Nixon only dreamed about doing what this guy's done. Nixon only dreamed about doing what Lois Lerner has done. Nixon only dreamed of using the IRS to damage his political opponents, but he never did it. But they wanted to convict him of the thought crime nevertheless. Well, these people have done it. And now they're being called on it, asked to explain, You say you haven't seen any violation of the law. What law are you talking about? I don't know. I didn't look at any law. You don't look at any law? I don't have to look at any law, Mr. Gowdy. There isn't any. We are the Obama administration. We break the law every day, and we do it with impunity. You. I mean, Last night on CNN, Joe John, the correspondent, had a report about me and my criticism of Eric Holder. Now, that's not what I'm surprised took so long. What I'm surprised took so long here is his report basically says, establishment Republicans are worried about Sarah Palin and me. Because we're too partisan. And they are worried that we are scaring off potential Republican voters and potential Republican donors. Here is Joe John's report.
Radio host Rush Limbaugh slammed Holder for the comments. President of the United States, Attorney General of the United States. Oh, poor guys, poor victims of a mean, racist America.
But not all Republicans are in attack mode. The combative tone, much like Sarah Palin's call for impeachment of the president,
so it's time to impeach,
has some Republicans saying it's all playing into the Democrats' hands in a midterm election year.
Impeachment is exactly what the president wants to talk about. Just like he liked the Republicans and conservatives to talk about him being born in Kenya for 5 or 6 years, he's happy to have the Republicans talk about impeachment. Bad thing to do. The politics of that are all wrong.
Now, I don't know where I fall on the Rove meter here, but I haven't spoken in favor of impeachment, although under certain circumstances, and if the political will for it could be developed, I mean, it's all dependent on that. I'm not in this. I never talked about him being born in Kenya, but I get lumped in with it. But the point is here. Notice I slammed Holder for the comments. Holder didn't slam us. Holder never slams the people he's really slamming or insulting or criticizing. Here's the African-American Attorney General of the United States basically whining about all the racism that's out there. And it's just a cover that they hide behind. And I dealt with it.
Now, can you hear me on this phone?
Yeah, I'm
your boss. Okay, so it was Mike. Mike was having...
Hello?
Yes.
Is it my connection with the radio?
I can't hear you very well.
Is that better?
Because I dialed in on my other number. Yes. Hello. Yeah, I'm here. Oh, okay.
Mr. Lawson?
This is Mark Friedland. Hello, please leave a message.
Record your message at the tone. When you are finished recording, press pound. To cancel, press star.
Hello?
To replay your message, press 1. Private, press 4. To send your message, press pound. To cancel, press star. To replay your message, press 1. To re-record your message, press 2. To mark this message urgent, press 3. To mark this message private, press 4. To send your message, press pound. To cancel, press star. To replay your message, press 1. To re-record your message, press 2. To mark this message urgent, press 3. To mark this message private, press 4. To send your message, press pound. To cancel, press star. You have exceeded the maximum number of allowable errors. Goodbye.
Mayor, former VP candidate Sarah Palin called your movement to bring a lawsuit up against the president, bringing a lawsuit to a gunfight that actually President Obama should be impeached. What's your response to Governor Palin?
I disagree.
What about the folks in your county who are calling for privately talk about impeachment?
I disagree.
Mayor, former VP candidate Sarah Palin called your movement to bring a lawsuit up against the president, bringing a lawsuit to a gunfight that actually President Obama should be impeached. What's your response to Governor Palin?
I disagree.
What about the folks in your county who are calling for privately talk about impeachment?
I disagree.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Let's see who this is. Hello, caller, can you hear us?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, this is Mark Friedland.
This is Mark Friedland.
Can you hear me, yes or no?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, are you on a delay? Are you listening to the computer? Don't listen to the computer.
No, I'm not listening.
No, I'm not listening. I'm on my phone.
Oh, okay, because it sounds like it's a delay. There must be a problem with Skype. Because I heard you perfectly clear. I heard you moving around in the background and everything. I heard you breathing. But you didn't hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear me?
Hear
huh.
Not before.
So I have...
Not before.
Oh, okay.
Okay, good.
And well, I'm hearing an echo now.
Yeah, see, there's got to be something wrong with Blog Talk Radio. It has to be. Well, you're hearing an echo. Yeah, maybe is it. Can you call us back from your live line? From your keep this open, but call us on your live line.
No, hang up.
Don't hang
number.
Up. Huh?
Is don't that, call back on the same number.
On the same number.
Is this your cell or?
Oh, you want me to call back on my landline?
On the
hotline,
line, yes. But hold.
Yeah,
but
I'll try
keep this line open. Keep this line open.
Okay.
Until
hold
you
on.
Do. Okay.
Hello.
Yeah. I mean, that was 20 minutes. Well, that's why I could tell him on the cell line to hang up if it doesn't work. Yeah, this will be edited out for the show, so we already lost 20 minutes. Yes. I don't see him coming up yet, but as soon as he comes up, okay, let's see here. Okay, Mark, can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
You can hear me on your landline.
I'm on the landline.
Good. Do you have an echo?
No, it sounds fine.
Okay. Good. Okay, good. Mark Freeland is, as I repeat again, was the vice chair for the Democratic Party in Mecklenburg County, Charlotte, North Carolina, and for the last 2 years, and now he is a candidate to be the chair for the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party. Mark, welcome to the show finally.
Thank you.
Tell us.
Glad to be here.
Why do you want to be chair for the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party?
Well, there's a lot of work to do. We have to get Democrats elected. And I have got a lot of experience. I've been working with the party as an officer for 6 years, and that experience has got to be used. And I think that I've got the best opportunity and the best knowledge to know how to move this party forward so that we can do the job of the Democratic Party, which is getting Democrats elected.
Okay. Getting Democrats elected.
Hello?
Did you hear it?
Can you hear it?
Yeah, now there was some background chatter.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, if you've been in for 6 years, you know that we made a great amount of headway in Mexico, but do you see areas
I can't hear. Is there somebody else talking?
Hey, Mark. Sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah. Who's this?
Okay. This is Thomas. I was just, we were having fun with mics, I guess. No, I was just asking. Mecklenburg County has had success in the last couple of years. We've turned it blue and kept it blue. But do you have any definitive ideas of how to make this a permanent blue county and keep Mecklenburg on the right path?
Well, see, it's not enough to win local elections. We have to win. We have to get Kay Hagan elected. Mecklenburg County is a absolute necessity for electing any statewide Democrat because we have so many Democrats here. And having a low turnout is no excuse if we just get the local candidates elected. We've got to increase the turnout because that increased turnout will affect other races beyond our own community. So we have to do more than just be successful. We have to be overwhelmingly successful. And I know, having worked in the party for quite some time now, where the opportunities are. And I would like to take those opportunities and work with the coordinated campaign. This year I've been working with people in the Kay Hagan campaign already and the North Carolina Democratic Party. And there's plans in the works being rolled out actually over the next week to do some major get-out-the-vote activities. I know where all the volunteers. I've been working with them for some years. They know me, and I know the sources of funding for the party in order to get the money that we need to finance the activities. So I think I'm in the best position to move this thing forward. We can't we don't have time to reinvent the party at this point. We've got to move forward.
Well, this is Mike. Can you hear me, Mark?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. There is a – they normally say the way Mecklenburg County goes – oh, because of our vote turnout, we are a major influence in whether or not this state is going to go blue.
Absolutely.
Well, purple.
Absolutely.
And that did not happen last time because there were plenty of Democrats that voted for McCarthy. Now, the problem that I have with this is, are they all brain dead, or they forgot they can't remember more than, well, 4 or 5 years when they voted against him on 2 different election cycles? I mean, what changed in their mind, you think?
Well, part of the problem
today.
Yeah. Part of the problem is that people vote based on their personal relationships, and people think, oh, I know McCrory. He's a nice guy. He's been around for so long, you get to know everybody. And people don't look behind to see what are they voting for. You know, we've got to get out of this small-town mentality that you vote for your next-door neighbor and see what is it that that really is going to move this community forward, whether it's a city election, county election, or statewide election, or even national election. We've got to look beyond the personalities, and we've got to say, you know, what are these people going to do for us? And if you look as a Democrat, you have to look at that, at those things. And I mean, if anybody hasn't learned since 2001 and 2000 that the Republicans are not serving the interest of the people who are registered Democrats. You're right. It makes no sense, but you can't take that for granted. We have the obligation as a party to get the word out, to inspire and motivate our voters, to get them to the poll, and to make sure they understand the issues, why they need to vote for Democrats. I know how to do that. I've been doing that, and we need to do what we've done in the past and improve on it.
Well, you see, here's the thing. Yeah, I understand you're absolutely correct in everything you say. But how did they come to the threshold that, oh, McCrory's a good guy and let's give him a chance? They voted against him in 2 different election cycles. What changed it? Why did they say, hey, let's jump over the cliff now? Because this guy and his boss, Art Pope, are going to put us in the same predicament as Brownback did and has and is doing in Kansas, where the state is $600 million in debt. Because they...
Well, you know, I'm in politics, I don't like to become a historian too much. You know, if we start spending a lot of time analyzing what happened before, we don't notice what's happening right now. And right now, I think people who voted for McCrory have realized their mistake. Why they voted in that day, at that time, that's a job for somebody to do some analysis on. But people know, well, Democrats know, that McCrory is ruining this state and undermining 100 years of progress that the Democrats have made here. So I don't think we have that problem going forward. Our job as a party is to come up with a good candidate for governor in 2016, and everybody get behind them so we can make some changes to the state and get us back on the right track.
Well, you know, that's fine, but you see, that's what we do here on this show. We analyze historic needs, because if you don't know what happened in the past, you are going to commit the same problem in the future.
Right.
Now, the problem is that...
For instance, let me just say this. Tom Tillis yesterday came out saying that he is against coal pollution, and he's the pro-environmentalist here, and he's running a campaign that way. So, if you don't know history,
yeah,
you might take him at his word.
And
that's
I'm
all
talking
I'm saying.
About history from 2 weeks ago. I'm not talking
yeah.
about...
Okay.
So these people change their mind every time they open their mouth. And the problem is, though, they see, I just hate keep talking about it in Democrat or Republican or independent categories because these guys don't care who you are. They're going to screw you. They're screwing everybody. They ain't just screwing Democrats. Yeah, of course, there's 1.5 or 1.25 more Democrats in North Carolina, but they are screwing everybody.
Yeah, but
us.
Once you don't have drinking water, it doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat.
Right, if you don't have drinking water, I mean, what does it matter?
Yeah.
I mean, okay.
Well, let me ask this. Since you say you know Kay Hagan and the whole campaign, and you know how important it is not to just be county focused. But one of the problems that we had during this last election is that the voter turnout is one problem, but one of the causes, if you will, of that was the infighting from the Democrats themselves. The Democratic Party, for some reason around here, just stands in a circle and shoots itself. And I don't understand it, but it's really terrible, and it costs us elections. So what do you say about that? Because several people have, they've fought every step of the way trying to block and remove the leadership of the Democratic North Carolinian leadership. And you have things like even on Kay Hagan's front, where she came in, and instead of going through the state, she went through a single county when she started her campaign. So how do we bridge, that and bring us all back together and get something going? Because we've got to win elections.
Well, the answer to that is very simple. We focus on the job at hand, which is to get our candidates elected. When we stop focusing on the job at hand, then it becomes an internal issue. But we need to stop looking at these short-term things and start realizing that the purpose of the Democratic Party, the mission and job of the Democratic Party, is to get Democrats elected. And we should stop, all these and any kind of divisive activity that prevents us from doing that. Unfortunately, I won't even say unfortunately because I'm proud of this. The Democratic Party represents the diversity of our own community. And when you have a diverse community, you're going to have differences of opinion. And we got to work those out. But at the end of the day, our job is to get Democrats elected. And that's what I plan to do if I'm elected chair, is to try to pull all the different parts of our party together, all the diverse parts of our party, to get the job done.
Well, let me just also bring this up to you. Let's talk about the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. These Republicans ripped into the president. You see, that's what these Democrats do. They get you these guys that want to take your money away. They want to tell you how to, want to put you in specialized care. They want to do it. Well, they don't mention the other things that is happening with the ACA. Last year, I pay for my youngest daughter's insurance. She's 30 years old. Bring a part-time vehicle. I'm still paying for her insurance. And I told the story 100 times already. To make it short, I went, and because anybody can go anywhere in this country to buy insurance. Just because you live in a specific state, you don't have to buy insurance from that state. You can go anywhere and buy insurance. Of course, they don't tell you that. So I went on a looking for a broker. I found a broker. He gave me a good deal because I had Blue Cross and Blue Shield, those criminals, and they raised the insurance, my daughter's insurance, from $226,000 a month to $407,000 a month in 2 years.
Wow.
I said, enough of this. So I went and got another company, and I'll tell you the name, Golden Rule. Fabulous company. My insurance broker got me with him. I with them for my daughter. I was able to get the $226 a month, the same insurance for $226 a month, but at a $2,500 deductible. I did have $500 deductible. So I said, well, wait a minute. I don't want $2,500 deductible. He said, don't worry about it. I'm going to sell you another insurance policy. $42 a month that will cover the $2,500 deductible. So now I'm paying $267 a month for the same insurance that I was paying 3 years ago, and it only went up to $267 instead of $407. Besides that, August 31st last year, I got a check in the mail from the insurance company that said, because of the Affordable Care Act, we have to reimburse you $99 for the insurance that you did not use, the portion of your policy that you did not use. People don't know that they will get reimbursed. If they're not sick, they will get a portion of that policy reimbursed. So, not only did I get that last year, but I just got another check in the mail this year for $80. My daughter did go to the doctor a couple of times last year. So the reimbursement is there. So people are getting reimbursed for insurance.
So you're seeing real change in real time.
This is real change from the Obama administration insurance.
Michael, I've got a better story.
All right?
I've got a better story. And my story is the opposite of yours, because I had Golden Rule insurance last year before the ACA went into effect.
Right.
Golden Rule is not participating in the health exchange. So I went on the health exchange and found insurance for half the price I was paying Golden Rule.
But I just
and then,
told you that lady in it.
Yeah, and then my son, who was on my policy, I was paying, I think it was like $200 a month for him. Now he got his own policy through the ACA that's subsidized. He's paying $69 a month.
That's great. But
I know. I mean, this is great stuff.
See, I don't understand when you had Golden Rule when you didn't, but they are participating in it because I got a letter that says they are.
Everybody.
Oh, so maybe it changed.
Yeah, of course it changed. How did I get reimbursed if they weren't participating?
The point is, this is real savings.
Right.
So you've got just in this table alone,
right,
all of us saving money. That means more money to put back into the economy.
Right.
We can afford things, to buy things, you know, we can go shopping, we can put in savings, we can do all these things which we haven't been able to do for years now. So this is all good news for America. But how do we translate this into getting people out to vote and keep that going instead of, you know, the opposite, where we're regressing to 1860?
There's one other question. Go ahead. Answer that, Mark.
Yeah, one of the issues is that we all know that they're listening to this program, all these issues, but not a lot of people are that plugged in. And our job as Democrats is to get out and knock doors, call people, and just one-on-one get the message out to people. You know, if everybody, not everybody's got the Internet, not everybody's online. In fact, generally the people in the lower income areas have less access to those kind of things or have less time to do it. So the party's job is to really get the message out, and the better we deliver the message, the better we communicate and contact people, the more we're going to get people out to vote.
That's correct. Joining us now one more time, Mr. Michael Evans, can you hear us?
I can hear you this time.
Oh, hallelujah. Hallelujah.
We had the hardest
It had to be Skype. It had to be Skype with the problems because Mark couldn't get on either. Do you know Mark Freeland?
Yes.
Mark, this is...
Hello, how are you doing?
Our former illustrious chair.
Former illustrious chair. Now, you are now the chair of Fresno, California. Is that correct? The far left coast.
We're not quite as far left as San Francisco, but yes.
According to Rush Limbaugh, the only people that are far left than you are is Real Limbaugh. So that's it.
And look, looking from the 1860s Carolinas, it's
right.
pretty far left.
That's correct. So,
any advice for us?
What kind of advice can you give the people who are listening and to the people listening here in Charlotte or anybody else? As you've been former chair, you were chair here, you're now chair up there. What did you see the difference between being chair here in Charlotte, North Carolina, and chair out in Fresno?
Well, there's a lot of similarities. I think key being a party chair anyway is trying to achieve unity, because even though Democrats are always working toward the same end, the individuals within the Democratic Party don't always seem to realize that. And that I found to be true everywhere. So working on unity. And then the other piece is money. It takes money to make a party work effectively. And you have to be an effective fundraiser to be an effective party chair.
I think one of the problems with Democratic fundraising is that it's the exact opposite from the Republicans. The Republicans get all their money from corporations and or, you know, billion-dollar donors, whereas Democrats live and breathe by the, you know, $5 from each individual citizen who contributes. And is there any great tips or help you want to give us? Because if you haven't noticed, we lost control of our state, and we have been suffering ever since. So we desperately need people like Mr. Friedland here to continue on winning and take the state back. Mike?
Yes, that was Greg TV, yes. I think an absolute key now is to leverage the Democratic strength in Mecklenburg County to counter the shenanigans going on in Raleigh. It's going to be up to the urban areas throughout the state to challenge the Republican madness. And Mecklenburg, of course, being the largest county, I think could have a key role in that.
Excellent. Well, Mark, is there anything that you would like to ask Mike, since he's has experience in exactly our area, our neck of the woods, if you would like any kind of tips or whatnot for the coming battle?
Well, I've known Mike for a while. Actually, Mike was one of the first people I met in the Democratic Party when I first got involved, and he encouraged me. Actually, in 2009, when I ran for city council. And I really appreciate all the work that Mike has done in Mecklenburg County when he was here, and also ran into him at the national convention when he was representing California back in 2012 when he came back to Charlotte.
All right,
But basically, I'm taking the example. I've been around for a while, and I've seen what all the chairs have done, and it's basically taking all the good points from the examples that have been set by the people who came before me, and moving forward and try to improve on that.
Well, one of the, and you know, I'm not a native Carolinian, but I've been here for a while working in politics, and I'm forever astounded and horrified at the same time by the I have no idea why, but we'll go out to people, we'll talk to them, everybody be thrilled and riled up and have good ideas, but when it comes down to election day, somehow, you know, 10 people show up, and I just don't know what the disconnect is to these people who they want a better life. They recognize how to get a better life, but they simply don't show up and vote. And that is the key element, is turnout. And we have horrific turnout. How do we fix that? I've been trying to do this for 10 years here, and it just walk.
I like to talk about this because this is an issue, and I'll take it more internal into the party, because the corresponding aspect of what you're talking about within the party comes in precinct organization. And in order to have a precinct or a precinct committee, we have to have five people show up in a meeting. It sounds pretty easy, but I've done this in a number of precincts around Charlotte and Mecklenburg County, and you have to call about 200 people and then do follow-up calls at least three times to be lucky to get five people to show up. Now, if we go back to 2011, pretty much in 2011 when we knew that the convention was coming here, it was basically the big party was coming and everybody wanted to be a part of it. So it was very easy to motivate people, to get them to show up for party events, and even to have them show up at elections. But as soon as the convention goes away, 2013 comes around, all of a sudden it's like people forgot about politics all of a sudden. And even in the party organization efforts, we were calling the 200 people and couldn't even get the five people to show up. So we've really got to do a lot of work in terms of really not even phone calls. We've really got to go and meet people in the communities one-on-one because that's really what it takes.
Well, you see, here's the thing. As a former salesperson.
Former? What?
Former. You know, when you're doing cold calling, you need to speak to 100 people in order to get 10 to bite. So this is the same storyline here. You know, and then when the story in the Bible where Christ says, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, render unto God what is God. Well, you know, if you don't render unto Caesar, you get the Caesar you deserve.
Yeah.
So
unfortunately,
the thing is that happened here. We have gotten through no fault of our own who are on the line. But for all those people that did not render unto Caesar, we got the Caesar we did not want. So how do we, short of a coup and stabbing him in the halls of Raleigh, get rid of him?
Are you saying that's Matt Caligula?
Yes, Matt Caligula. How do we get rid of him?
Well, it really comes back to what I was saying. We have to do a better job in organizing our party. We need to have Democrats in every community. They need to spread the word out, knocking on doors in their neighborhoods, get the word out, because that's what brings people to the poll. People will talk to people they know.
Absolutely.
And and these days it's getting harder to call people because a lot of people, all they have is cell phones.
Yeah, that's true. That's another storyline, because my phone was ringing in the background. I never answer my phone, my hardline. Never answer.
One wonders why you still have it, Mike.
There's always the case when, like today, when Skype didn't work.
Yeah, that's true.
So the thing is, all right. So
yeah, but here's one of the things, and this is where it comes down to what the Republicans have gone after. We were trying to make it easier to vote. We were trying to get more days, more early voting, more sites. You know, just more access for everyone so that they can go. Because one of the big problems that we have, you know, Democrats are working class people. They're people who actually have to work every day to feed themselves.
You mean they're all fat on welfare?
Yeah, you know, they're not the 1% sitting around in the gated community, you know, having a chauffeur. But these are people who have jobs, and usually 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 jobs, you know, because these days you have to have that just to turn the lights on in the house. So the problem becomes sometimes they want to come out, sometimes they want to help, but they don't have time. They're always working. So how do we do everything we can to get these people to the voting place, to get these people engaged? Because sometimes it's not like they don't care. They do. They just don't have the opportunity.
Yes, well, that's why we need to cut down all the voting places and cut down the early vote time.
No, that's exactly what the Republicans are doing.
Anyway, and everybody holding online, I'm going to get to you. We ran a little late because Skype was a problem today, so just hold on. We will get to you. And David, I'm going to pull you up right now, David. Mr. David Adams, how are you, sir?
Michael, how are you today? Thomas, how are you? Always a pleasure, my friends.
Hello, sir.
Well, let me finish up with Mr. Freeland. Mark, tell us.
Yeah.
Election for the chair of the party takes place on what day?
It's scheduled for August the 9th.
Okay. And who are the people who can vote? See, it's not like everybody in Mecklenburg County is going to vote. Who are voting? Who can vote for you or any other candidate?
The voters are the County Executive Committee, which is made up of all the precinct chairs and vice chairs of organized precincts in the county, and we have about 75 of them. And then that also, all the elected Democrat, all the Democratic elected officials in Mecklenburg County, members of the state executive committee that live in Mecklenburg County, and members of any other Democratic party committee on a district or state level that live in Mecklenburg County.
Okay, none of them are felons, right?
Well, there might be, but
we just don't know it yet. But anyway, as I was saying, that I want to thank you, Mark, for being there. And you don't have to hang up. You can listen to what the other stuff we're going to be talking about. But I want to thank you and everybody who is a vice chair or chair of a precinct, the 75 approximate precincts in Mecklenburg County. Your butt needs to go out and vote. And that date is... Again?
August 9th.
And where's it going to be held at?
The location hasn't been finalized. We should know by tomorrow.
And who finalizes that?
That's the board. The board is working on that.
The Board of Election or the...
No. The Mecklenburg County Democratic Party board. That includes all the elected officers and the presidents of the auxiliaries.
Okay. Very good. All right. I want to thank you, Mark, for taking time out and talking to the people and tell us how you think you need to get this thing running at full speed ahead in Mecklenburg County. And I'll be talking to you again.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and I just want to remind all Democrats to get out and vote in November.
Absolutely, right. Without a doubt.
And best of luck.
Best of luck.
Thanks.
Let's see, Michael Evans, chair of the left wing of the Democratic Party out there in California. As just what Rush Limbaugh is going to do. What have you seen as far as, one of the reasons why I got you there is because we're going into a problem here that's Guantanamo Bay number two. Matter of fact, they just moved up to Guantanamo Bay. One is the rash of shooting that, I mean, these people are so outrageous in New Hampshire County. I mean, you're liable to get shot just because you look black. You may not even be black. You look black, you're going to get shot one way or the other. Now, well, what have you heard? Anything you can tell us about what took place out there in California with that... was he a state trooper or just a regular police that beat that woman severely? Michael?
Seem to have lost our connection.
Okay.
Again.
How about now? You hear me now?
I can hear you better now.
Okay. Yeah, this is mostly... Skype is having a major problem today.
Yeah, it's probably all the bad weather.
What... Can you tell us anything about the... Because we're going to be talking about the shootings in New Hanover County and how is that if you even look like you get shot on sight just for going in your house. What can you tell us about? I know that wasn't what you were doing, but can you tell us anything about the beating of that woman by that? Was he a state trooper or was he a police? Michael, did we lose you? We may have lost him. David.
Yeah, you? Mike. I'm here, buddy.
Is there anything you have learned in all your digging around about what happened out there in California with that woman? Like,
Go ahead.
Let me go. I'm bringing other guests online now. we have with us, David, just stay right there. We have Lindsey Smith and Mr. Freddie Smith, who are not related. Also joining us is Mr. Sonia Benetone, who is chairperson of the New Hanover County North Carolina Black Leadership Forum. Sonia?
Yes. How are you, Mr. Lawson?
Well, we have a very bad connection because of this weather is severe. I don't know. Well, how is it going? Is it raining hard down there or what?
It was raining very heavy earlier. It's still cloudy at this point.
Well, we have a very bad connection. We've had terrible. We're running a little bit behind because of the connection with California and even here in Charlotte, we couldn't get through. Tell us something about the New Hanover County Black Research Center. Tell us what went on with
In New Hanover County, that's in Wilmington, North Carolina, which has a rich racial history, the 1898 massacre, where innocent blacks were killed, and they declared the White Declaration of Independence, declared that an African-American would never rule in Wilmington, North Carolina. Also, it is the home of the Wilmington 10, and the local mayor in 2012 refused to give the pardon to the Wilmington 10, and they were finally pardoned by Governor Perdue at the end of the year in 2012. Since October of last year, there have been 5 incidents of alleged excessive use by law enforcement based on information and belief. October the 13th, 2013, the shooting death of Brandon Smith, his widow is with us today. He was shot 27 times by law enforcement, and he only had a cell phone. October the 25th, the shooting death of 2 unarmed African-American suspects, Tevin Robinson and Ronald Rowland, in a Pizza Hut robbery. Each victim was shot 8 times each. October the 31st, this went nationally when a police officer put a canine on after apprehending Johnny Williams. He placed a dog in the car after he has surrendered to police. The dog tore his neck, and he has nerves in his neck that will probably never heal. January the 28th, the shooting death of Grace Lewis Dinks, who was shot 4 times by law enforcement after a call was made for her because a boyfriend behind a suicide attempt. They thought she was going to kill herself, so they came. The boyfriend called the law enforcement, and she was shot 4 times and killed. April the 4th, Tyrone Rivers, 17-year-old, was arrested. It's pending FBI investigation. He was allegedly beaten in the back of a police car, and he does have a disability. He is autistic. They will not release the video yet. And all these incidents, everyone was cleared by the grand jury in New Hanover County. Also, the last event was a former sheriff killed under custody in New Hanover County.
Say that again. I interrupted you. Say that again.
Okay. The last one, a former sheriff, Ronald Hewitt, was killed while in police custody. This happened this month. While in police custody, he was killed, and that's still under investigation.
Now, but before you go on, Thomas, I'm going to ask you. Matter of fact, I'll ask David. David, what do you think the connection is in every one of these cases?
Well, Michael, based on what she described, because of the racial history of Wilmington,
You know, I'm glad she brought up the massacre of 18 of that year, and then also the Wilmington 10, because I'm very well aware of those two particular stories, those chases, but I had forgotten about them. And that's very important for us to be able to revisit those incidents, just to give us a good feel of the racial dynamics in Wilmington, North Carolina. Now, there appears to be a culture of open season on African-Americans in Wilmington, North Carolina. I mean, usually there's some sort of protocol that's used when you bring a person into custody. I mean, you're sticking a dog on a child, basically, in the backseat of a car. I mean, where do they do that at? Where does it, in this country, does a guy surrender and you put him in the back of a police car and then they put the canine in the back of the police car with the suspect? Where does that happen at?
That happens in New Hanover County. And I was
That's just bizarre, okay? And then, you know, I've been going over Brandon Smith's case. I'm very, very concerned about his case, okay? There are a few unanswered questions that I need to get a hold of, you know, because a lot of the details aren't very clear based on everything that I've read. But you're talking about a black man who was shot 27 times, who allegedly was laying on the ground. On the ground. I mean, that has to be one of the most obvious positions of some type of surrender, okay? And this man's on the ground. He doesn't have a weapon. He has a cell phone, okay? And they shoot him 27 times. How do they justify that? How would that justify?
Before you go on, I want to bring in the wife of Brandon Smith. Mr. Smith, good afternoon, Missy. How are you?
Yes. Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Could you go over for everybody listening the horrible details for us so people will get the picture from your standpoint how you found out and what happened?
How I found out that my husband was killed was I got a phone call from a friend to go on Facebook and to look on Facebook social media. And when I went on Facebook, I found a post from a sheriff from the Brunswick County Sheriff's Department posting on his Facebook page that, great job, boys. We've gunned down the suspect and we killed him. And he was telling his co-workers, great job for gunning the suspect down.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, was the last part of the statement that he made. That's what I'm talking about.
So bragging.
After I found out, when I went to the scene, they wouldn't let me identify my husband. They wouldn't let me go to his body. The only thing I was handed was a piece of paper saying to call the DA's office the next day. And when I called the district attorney's office the next day, nobody had anything to tell me. Nobody had no explanation. They just acted like they didn't know what was going on. And I wasn't able to get his body for 3 days until I received it at the funeral home.
Isn't it some of the details here is that when the autopsy said that when they did the autopsy, they identified Brandon Smith's body as a white 40-year-old with a goatee and tattoos.
Yes, now when I got the medical report and the autopsy, it said he was a white male, he was 40 years old, he had a goatee, and he had tattoos on him that said, Fort City Most Wanted. And he's never had a goatee. He's never had that tattoo on him. And he was 30 years old. He was a black male. And it was just everything is just messed up.
So evidently, this is misidentification, wrongful death. Well, tell us how they got to this, to go after you, your husband. What happened?
Again.
Why did they think that he was the suspect they were looking for? Tell us what happened.
Allegedly, an officer had got shot, and he was in a neighborhood where it's all minority black people, and they were trying to say that he had shot a cop. So in mix of trying to bring him in for questioning, when they found him, the cop that got shot his partner and two of his other partners killed him.
Hey, Michael, if I can interrupt Mrs. Smith right there for 1 second, because there's a detail I want to bring out. Now, the officer who was shot, he was a deputy, okay, a sheriff deputy. Him and another guy was questioning Brandon and one of Brandon's friends, okay? They actually were going they were part of the Safe Streets Task Force. They were going to question him. Now, allegedly, Brandon shot this guy and took off. Okay, according to the cop story. But the other guy that he was his friend, they took him into custody, questioned him, and released him. Now, where have you ever heard something like that? He's with a guy that shot a cop, and they let him go? Are you kidding
Correct.
Me? Are you kidding me? You mean to tell me they didn't interrogate him night and day till they found out exactly who this guy was that shot this cop? They had probable cause to hold this guy forever.
Well, you did mention something about him running away.
Well, that's the cop's version. But that's only the cop's version, Michael.
Yes, but here, but Lindsay, tell us something about Brandon where that never could have happened.
Brandon, a year and a half prior to that, Brandon was in the hospital for ongoing for 3 years because he was in a motorcycle accident and he had broke his right femur bone and his left arm. So he had constantly kept getting staph infections and in and out of the hospital for long periods of time, so he couldn't run fast, and they believe that all black people can run fast.
He couldn't even run away. This is the point. He couldn't run away. What's wrong with this picture?
Again, what's wrong with this picture? You have an execution. And the tragedy is that it was mistaken or whatever.
No,
that
but,
it's this guy.
But was it that
they just went out to kill
him? Yeah, but isn't it that the officer, the partner, who is the one who shot the police officer?
Well, see, that's
yes.
the other problem. That's the other problem that I have with that, Michael. Okay, it's just so sudden. I mean, from what I've read is that some of the eyewitnesses, when Brandon did, first of all, Mrs. Smith, did Brandon drive a Crown Vic, a light-colored Crown Vic?
No, he never had a car. That was his
Okay. Well, according to eyewitnesses in a little development where this all took place where they killed her husband, a light-colored Crown Vic came into the area, and someone got out of the car and ran into the woods, and the cops came and pursued him, chased him into the woods. Okay? Now, you know, if this was Brandon, if Brandon was the guy that was in a Crown Vic that they're chasing and pursuing in the car, how is it that the partner of the cop that was allegedly shot by allegedly Brandon, how is it that they were the ones that found the guy? You know, I mean, typically
exactly.
when you have a situation like that where an officer is shot, the people that are closely work to them, that closely work with them, they're instructed to stay away from the case because
exactly.
of the fear of the lack of impartiality.
Yes.
Exactly. It's a tremendous conflict of interest. Okay, so I don't understand how these cops were the ones who caught Brandon, you know.
And the cops, the ones that went and killed him, all the cops were narcotics, and all of them were in unmarked cars. So none of them were saying, hey, police, stop, nothing. They were all unmarked, and they were drug tests, and Brandon never been wanted. He never had any drug charges for the drug test to be after him.
But what I understand also is the one policeman who's now resigned or retired or let go, he is the
yes.
one who actually shot his partner.
Yeah, it was a friendly fire.
It was a friendly fire.
So on top of all of this?
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
the whole point. Was it a friendly fire?
And they had
they
to cover it up. They had to cover it up by getting rid of Brandon. Because he was
and now the guy is off this force, and he's moved to Pennsylvania, and he's saying because he doesn't work for law enforcement because he's scared of his life for gang retaliation, but he's worked with gang people like for 8 years doing probation for them. So there's no way that he's all of a sudden scared of people in gangs.
Now,
so that's been his job.
There's one more apple to put on this top of this cheese station. Tell us about your lawyer, Lindsay.
Well, my lawyer reported everything to the U.S. Justice Department because the Sheriff's Department would not release any information to us to file a claim against them. And she released everything to the Justice Department, all the right questions, why the officer who got shot, partner, killed my husband. She told them everything. And now since she's released all this information, she lives in the town where all this happened, and somebody has come and threatened her and scared her off. So now she's resigning from my case.
Boy, that's a pretty active clan of people out there. And if you have ever
any.
Hey, let's go talk. She's saying everything is just so political, and she has to live there.
I've heard that somewhere before, right?
It's not political. It's corruption.
Yeah. We heard that somewhere before.
Oh, yeah.
There was another case that comes to mind where somebody said, hey, I got to live here.
Yeah.
I can't do anything about it.
David, where was that at in the prison?
That was Zally Gill. That was Zally Gill, the Franklin County Chair of the NAACP, who told Elizabeth Crudup that he wasn't going after a black kid in jail because he's got to live around there.
That's
Guantanamo Bay North, number one.
Give me a break. Well,
hey, look, now, I don't want to disparage. We're doing something wrong here, Mike. I know it's a cute phrase, but I don't want to disparage the hard work in the torture facility that we do it in Guantanamo.
That's right.
This is not the same thing. This is not torture and whatnot.
No.
See, we got on that with the boy who was hidden in a hole in Franklin County for a year or two. So we started to do it like a prison.
Yes.
However, these are much more, I think you were on point, much more like South Africa old South, where they had uncontrolled, basically, police action, but the gang of killers said go and do things. I think it's very instructive to look at a couple of things besides the racism. The hyper-militarization of the American police force that has occurred ever since 9/11, and what you said about this being drug-related. All the vice squads, you know, they get exemptions from things like identifying themselves, following police procedure. They can do that no knock. What a quaint way to say beat your boy and come in and shoot you in the face. But all of these kind of guys came above them. They work as basically a black ops paramilitary operation. That's what they do. They go around heavily armed with no accountability. No identification.
And they don't wear
unmarked.
White people.
Yeah, they're wearing, well, you know, but it's the same thing. But we need to really look at this. But it's more like kill school than one home. But this is horrific.
Now, we also have on the line, but this has been waiting, is a gentleman named Freddie Smith, who is the father of Jelani Smith, 20 years of age. And Jelani was one of three people that were supposedly part of the Pizza Hut holdup shooting. The police killed Ronald Deshaun Rowland Jr. and Savane Robinson Quest. The only two ever was Jelani Smith. Now, Mr. Smith, good afternoon. Can you tell us a little bit about this particular case, what happened?
Yeah, on the night in question, my son and my nephew and my son's best friend, Tevin, somehow they plotted some scheme robbed a Pizza Hut. Well, an informant notified the Brunswick County Sheriff Department. They staked out my house and saw the three boys leaving my house that evening, followed them to the New Hanover County line, which the New Hanover County Police Department and Sheriff Department both followed them to an apartment complex close to the Pizza Hut. They, once the boys got out of the vehicles, the cops followed them to the Pizza Hut and staked out the Pizza Hut. The boys waited for some guys that were out back smoking into the building. Once the employees entered the building, that's when the guys forced them back inside. During all this, the police noticed everything that was going on. They seen everything that was going on. The whole incident lasted inside the building probably around about 10 minutes or less. As the boys were exiting the building, keep in mind that neither one of the guys had a real firearm. My son, in the video, it plainly shows that his the weapon that he had was a fake BB gun, and he kept it pointing down, whereas in the police report it stated that he kept pointing it at the manager. He specifically said he kept it pointing down because he didn't want anyone to notice that it was fake. And in the video, it proved that. As the boys exited the building, within 12 seconds, two were dead. My son was shot. My son entered back in the building. The only reason why he's still alive today is because he was the last one to exit the building. In the autopsy photos, it shows that those boys were surrendering when they heard the first gunshot. They never even had a chance because the police never acknowledged themselves. Kevin had a tennis ball size wound in his wrist where he got shot by a high caliber weapon, and that plainly showed that he must have had his arms up trying to surrender when the cops were firing.
So, with stating that, is there where did you say that they did not try to rob the pizza? With the evidence shows that they tried to rob the pizza hut. Is that fact? Mr. Smith.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So the
I'm sorry, I got a bad connection. Can you say that again?
It says that the evidence shows that they tried to rob the pizza.
I still can't understand it.
Okay. He said
that the video shows that the guys, your son and his accomplice, tried to rob the Pizza Hut. The video shows that.
Yes, the video shows them forcing the guys inside. One camera shows that Ronald took the employees back to the back, and I'm not sure if it showed whether or not he put them in the refrigerator cooler. But that's where they force all the employees into that refrigerator cooler. One video shows Ronald at the cash register with the manager, along with Jelani, my son. And in that video, it shows that Jelani never even pointed the gun at anyone. It just hit. He had his gun facing down, which it was a fake BB gun with the tip broken off. Before Jelani exited the building, he threw his BB gun in the trash.
So he didn't have it with him when he came out. You're saying is these two individuals, well, it would have been three, but they missed, were actually executed.
I couldn't understand that.
Yeah, he's asking, they were actually exiting when they got shot, when the cops opened fire on them, they were exiting the establishment.
Yes, sir, they were. They all exited the establishment one by one. Kevin exited first, then Ronald, then Jelani. And it was all within a matter of 5 or 6 seconds.
So they were actually executed then?
Yes, sir, they were. And in the report, it states that Ronald was coherent and he was actually responding to the policeman after he was shot. But the evidence showed that there was no way he was still alive. In the helicopter camera, it showed them dragging Ronald's body closer to Kevin's body. So if he was still up and speaking to the policeman at the time of the shooting, after the shooting, then why would they be dragging his body like a rag doll? This all happened that night around 11:30 that night. It was on a Friday night. We didn't get notified till about 5:30 that morning. We got to the hospital. They wouldn't release any information. Medical staff wouldn't tell us anything because they said it was still under police investigation. The police department wouldn't tell us anything because they said the FBI took over. So we were just all in limbo trying to figure out what is really going on. Kevin's mother got there. You know, Kevin was her only child. And she was just devastated and destroyed to the fact of what was going on. Keep in mind, these kids were college kids, never been in trouble, never been in major trouble. Kevin was a Navy reservist and a student at North Carolina A&T. My son and Kevin both went to North Carolina A&T together after high school, and because of my son being placed on academic probation, he came home for a little while.
Okay, but so what was the reason why they were out? And this doesn't add any credence to why they're dead and your son is wounded. Why did they go out to rob the pizza?
From what I was told, it was a plan. It was planned by my nephew and some other guys, and he just asked my son and Kevin to tag along. We don't really know the gist of everything that's going on because we can't talk to my son to find out exactly what's going on because they won't release his bond. They won't lower his bond low enough where we can get him out so he can really talk. He don't really want to say what really happened by him being behind bars because everything is being recorded. And I believe that's the reason why they're keeping his bond so high and won't reduce it any.
Well, does he have a lawyer?
He does have a lawyer, but it's a court-appointed attorney. We can't afford a real attorney at this point.
Okay, but what's the lawyer say? Have you spoken to the lawyer?
We have, and being that everything is being recorded, he tells her what he really want to tell her. I mean, he tells her what he want to tell her, but he don't want to tell her everything because he's afraid that everything is being recorded. At least that's what he's telling us.
Well, realistically, you're supposed to have a safe environment where your lawyer can be told information that the court doesn't know. So everything should
right.
be recorded.
Right.
And if this lawyer should see to it that it's not being recorded.
Right, correct.
So
yeah, I have a question for Mr. Smith, Michael. Did your son, now I understand that you said that your son never pointed a gun at the manager. The video shows that he never pointed a gun at anyone, including the store manager, I guess when they had him at the register, trying to get him to get the money out of the register, what have you. Do you know for a fact when your son was exiting the store whether he had the gun pointed upward or if he had it pointed where it could it be interpreted as him possibly trying to shoot his way out or have it to, you know, to negatively harm someone? Do you know for a fact whether or not your son had a gun lifted?
Neither one of the boys had a gun in their head when they left the building. My son had already threw his gun in the trash can.
Okay. Okay.
And in the video it shows that all three of the boys' hands were free.
Okay. Okay. Wow.
So again,
wow. So that was an ambush. Like,
yes,
I think, like Thomas said, that was an execution. That was an ambush and an execution.
My son got shot in the hand once by a shotgun, and then he went back inside the building. They made him bear crawl on his face for about maybe 40, 50 feet from inside the building to the police cruiser. On the ground. The other two kids were shot more than 8 times apiece, and the buildings around surrounding the Pizza Hut were shot up as well. So there's no telling how many actual shots were fired. In one of the videos they showed all the weapons that were used, and some of the weapons they won't even use in Afghanistan. You know what I mean? They're so high-powered.
Wow. Wow.
They had, like, AR-15s, 40 cals, 45s. I mean, they had so many weapons, it was ridiculous.
How many people?
Excuse me?
How many police?
Dozens.
I guess somebody knocked off a real big at that time, and no one would have been there.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, Michael, in the interest of public safety, I mean, you think that they could have been a little bit more proactive in having officers stationed close by the establishment, so once they, established for a fact that this was going to be the plant robbery, that they could have apprehended them right there as opposed to waiting until they come out and then have this big shootout. You know, you think in the interest of public safety, somebody would have brainstormed and came up with a contingency plan to make sure that you minimize any kind of harm to the cops, number one, you know, and then to any other private citizen and the people in the store. You know, so I just don't understand that. You know, you stake out the place, you get a tip that the kids are going to rob the establishment, you stake the place out, and you wait till they go in and rob it, and when they come out, you shoot them to death. What the hell is that?
Well, it's
the Wild West.
It's the Wild, Wild West. That's all it is.
And they walk out of the saloon,
that doesn't make sense to me. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. It seems to me that if I get a tip that I got a group of young men that are planning to rob a local establishment in the area, okay, I stake out their home where these young men are going to allegedly leave from, and I follow them. As soon as I see them within footsteps of the establishment, I'm taking them into custody. I'm taking them in custody.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Or if you have proof of a robbery, but you have a conspiracy to commit a crime, and you can arrest them.
Exactly. And they had these fake guns on them. That would have just corroborated the fact that this was, in fact, a conspiracy to rob the establishment. You know, but at first, when Mr. Smith was talking about this, when Michael introduced me to him, I think the other day, I had a problem with his story. Because I was like, wait a minute, the guy's son's going in here and he's robbing. He's part of a robbery. So I'm not getting the gist of this. So it's just like a moment ago, I just realized that these kids actually exited the establishment with no weapons or nothing in their hands, and the police fired upon them. I mean, where do you authorize that kind of use of force when the subjects have no weapons or not posing a threat? I mean, they're actually fleeing. They're fleeing a crime scene. And you just open fire on them?
Maybe they would have been the victims.
Well, see, and I suppose they were the victims to clean the crime.
Yeah. That's a very good point, Michael, because it very well could have been some of the employees in there trying to flee the place. You know what I mean? And they just accidentally shoot them. I mean, I guess they wanted to shoot the first person that came out the door.
Exactly.
Well, then, Mike, even these were the criminals. We've spent 15 days developing a form of non-lethal weapons known to man.
Okay.
So where are all these famous tasers and beanbag guns and gas that incapacitate people? I mean, we got entire truckloads full of them in every police department everywhere. So why didn't they just knock them out, tase them, do something
now,
like that?
Now, here's with all this going on, up in your neck of the woods, David, there is something very similar, and I'm going to play this because I want to tie it in together. This is something that is going on for the last 2 days. We've been playing up big in the paper, and I'd like everybody to listen for a minute.
Philadelphia, where a stunning corruption scandal has sent shockwaves through the city's police department. Six narcotics officers have been arrested on charges of kidnapping, extortion, and drug dealing following 6 years of alleged abuse of authority.
The allegedly targeted suspected drug dealers, kidnapping, beating them, illegally arresting them, then going into their properties, taking drugs and money, even selling drugs on the street, together splitting about $500,000.
The six officers stole upwards of $500,000 of cash, drugs, even watches and clothing. Most of their targets were suspected drug dealers. In one case, they allegedly dangled a man off an 18th floor balcony before stealing $8,000 worth of belongings. Two of those indicted police officers stopped a suspected drug dealer somewhere along this street. They allegedly stole $30,000 right out of the car he was driving, then illegally held him overnight and stole $80,000 more right out of his home.
These accusations are shocking. And local reports say more police could soon be implicated. The arrest followed a two-year joint investigation by the FBI, federal prosecutors, and Philadelphia police. And right now, all the legal cases these officers were ever involved in are in serious jeopardy. Let's go to Philadelphia, where a stunning...
David, going back to you, is this an epidemic that's going across the country here?
I don't think it's an epidemic, Michael. I don't think it's an epidemic. I think it's just it's something that's been going on all along, and then, you know, they're not as good as they used to be of covering stuff up.
In New York City, like the head,
Tommy. Yeah?
Yes. Okay, I think because of social media and tapes and people being able to, cameras and things, it's being more exposed now. In New Hanover County, we have a new gang. It's called our law enforcement because the gangs aren't shooting people 27 times without a cell phone. The law enforcement is doing that. So, they're there to protect and serve, not to shoot first and ask questions later. And that's what they're doing. And I think that now you have more evidence to show these things, just like in the Pizza Hut tape. If you view it, the employees don't even look like they're scared. You know, it was almost as if, I wouldn't be surprised if that wasn't partially an inside job there. You know, they look like, they weren't scared, not near a bit. They were almost laughing. And, you know, somebody's coming to rob the place. You know, they literally looked like they were laughing. It was a joke.
Did any money transpire? Did the employees give these three individuals any money?
No. They took cell phones and watches from the employees. And they only got away with, $20 is what I believe it was, like $21.
Jesus.
Because the money was in the safe, and there was only like $21 that they got off these victims.
If the police had went through procedures and said stop police, those young men would have surrendered and would be alive today. It was no excuse to shoot those young men times apiece. They were unarmed. It was very visible there. See, now you have cameras and things that you didn't have years ago. So that's why I think this is more becoming more exposed and bringing awareness.
So realistically, what we're saying is, and what you're saying is, Sonia, that this stuff has been going on all along and still going on, but since the innovation of all these different means of media, people are now more aware of it.
Absolutely. Especially in New Hanover County. This has been going on for a long period of time. I've heard, and I haven't gotten all the details, that there are even other cases out there that haven't come to the surface yet. So,
okay.
Well,
what has the NAACP done about these six? Yes. David, now.
I read a newspaper article where they held a news conference back in October, November last year. They said they were demanding
And they, who are they demanding him from?
They wanted to know what was on the lion's head.
Well, you know,
they thought it was not important. But I see. November, the police department.
So you're saying that these police, all these police, and all 16 cases are back on the street in their job?
This is the guy who's shot.
That's the guy who was shot.
No,
understand your question. I'm sorry, Mr. Lawson. I had the connection. Could you repeat that for me?
How does the police department explain the great the death of Grace Lewis Geek? How do they explain that in January of this year?
Okay, you're talking about what is the police position in regards to these incidents?
No. He's talking specifically about the female who was shot four times and killed, who allegedly was trying to commit suicide. You know, how are they justifying shooting her?
That to me is one of the most horrific. They have no justification. If you look at the DA's report, I mean, it's blatant clear what it was. They knew she had a gun when her boyfriend called, and they saw the glimpse of the gun and just started shooting. They did not negotiate with her. Usually if you see someone trying to kill themselves, you try to talk them out of it. They didn't try to talk to her. They didn't try to negotiate with her. They just saw the gun and started shooting. That was it.
Well,
and if you look at the DA's report, it's not, you know, and then of course you it, no justification. They explained the first incident with the late Brandon Smith was by the Sheriff's Department. The other four was with the Wilmington Police Department, and the local chapter of the Black Leadership Caucus in New Hanover County has called for his resignation after the dog incident. Since then, we've had three other incidents happen. The last incident with the Sheriff's Department, where a former sheriff was held into custody That, of course, that was by the sheriff department, but there's a pattern here. And even in the dog video, you had both sheriff and the Wilmington Police Department on the scene, even though it was a policeman that put the dog on the Mr. Johnny Williams after he had surrendered. And
It seems to me that they seem to be working hand in hand here because the Franklin County is
absolutely. We have called for his resignation. We feel that both they have lost control of their department. They're not fit to be chief of police. I mean, you have to hold the leadership accountable. We also had an incident here where a policeman was about to kill himself, but they talked him out of it. They didn't go shoot him up like they did the veteran. Young lady who's also a veteran.
Oh, I wonder why. I wonder if that's a variation in pigmentation in the two cases. I'm wondering.
About to say, was he white policeman? Sonia?
This officer was white.
Yes.
They say? I mean, there is a big with our law enforcement here in New Hanover County, a big problem. And I fear if something isn't done about it, it's going to be some old mothers that are going to continue to grieve that don't have to grieve. You know, if people didn't break the law, we wouldn't need to pull the law enforcement. They're there to protect and serve. They have a certain protocol or laws that they have to follow and not to shoot first and ask questions later. I mean, they're just like, they're worse than the gangs. I feel safer around the gangs than I do law enforcement right now.
Well, the question that I asked from the very beginning, I asked David, what was the connection? The connection with every one of these cases is there's a black person connected somewhere along the line. The white veteran, Grace Louise Dent, who killed himself, had a black boyfriend, and he's the one who called it in. Now, the thing is, the woman who's a veteran, all her civil rights were violated. He said that the law enforcement made no attempt to talk to Ms. Dent or to encourage her not to take her own life. There was no request four times. And Ms. Dent still, while she was still in the car, she wasn't even out of the car. Okay, so what do the police do in New Hanover County when someone has a mental problem and is African American? They just shoot them then, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, like I said, the history itself speaks for itself. That tone hasn't changed. Obama has never won any election in New Hanover County. I mean, he won statewide, but under no conditions, and I believe some people worked really hard towards getting him elected of both all races, but not from necessarily from New Hanover County. So it is a county that is just this history is there for itself. I mean, it speaks for itself. I mean, they still have the Confederates statues up, and it's really sad, but it is what it is.
Well, let's talk about another case here. Terrell Rivers, who you mentioned before, 17 years of age, was arrested by Corporal James C. Johnson on suspicion of peddling suspicion, period. Okay, he's an African-American male who's suspected in a robbery. However, he was found by authorities not to be associated with the robbery. Again, not to be associated with the robbery. The tape reveals that during his arrest, Mr. Rivers was allegedly beaten and threatened physically by the law enforcement, and while supposedly secured in the back seat of a police car, It says that, now this is what he beat while he was serving a 19th season. The victim temporarily has a disability and is autistic and was verbal during the arrest, but Mr. Ribby, due to his fact of his autism, did not understand why he is being arrested.
Yeah, in an FBI case, that's a very unfortunate case. His mother has, they will not, they keep prolonging it. Now the DA should have given a report, but by the North Carolina Black Leadership Local Chapter speaking out against this injustice, they're prolonging, because this happened in April. The DA still hasn't released a report yet. And I think he's waiting for it to die down. And that's the type of this is the type of town, just like the lawyer, for example. Anybody that speaks up for what's right, that speaks truth to power, they try to find ways to quiet them. And this town is constructed. Now, the NAACP came down when Brandon Smith case first happened back then in October, and we hadn't seen them say another word about it. And that's what SBI report. Well, the SBI report is with any case. You don't have an SBI report, okay? So that's just protocol, and that's not going to bring the justice that this family needs. I mean, it will help with the evidence and things of that nature, but these are serious issues, and we need people to continue to speak truth to power, and that's how this town is designed. When people speak truth to power, just like the attorney in this particular case, they try to shut them down.
Well, Lindsay, what steps have you taken since your attorney has stepped aside from the case?
Well, I have went to other attorneys outside of the county, and I can't have an attorney build a case against this case unless they release my FBI report, and they won't release it to me or any other family members.
Who won't release it? Lindsay?
Yes.
Who will not release your case?
The DA's department, the sheriff's department.
Okay, David, didn't you say that you could file a Freedom of Information Act?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me all of the reports in Brandon's case, specifically the ballistics, any ballistics that they got, because if he allegedly shot this cop, I want to know how they know this. Okay, I mean, where's the gun? Where's the gun he allegedly used? Okay, and what's that match to the projectile that they took out of this officer's leg? Okay, how do they put this on this guy? You know, what ballistics did they have? And then this other officer that allegedly left town. Okay, I was listening to someone said he was a parole officer, whatever, the friendly fire guy. Okay, what weapon was he using? Okay, was that tested? Okay. You know, I mean, these are all the things that you can find out once you get, you know, your Freedom of Information Act request. And it's very simple. All you do is write a request for this stuff, and you present it to the authorities. Okay? And they have, by federal law, they have a certain time frame to respond and present those documents. Okay? And if they don't do that, then you just go ahead and notify the Department of Justice again and send them forward them a copy of the Freedom of Information Act request. They have to give it to you.
Well,
you know, they
so,
have to give it to you. There's no ifs and buts about it. They have to present the documents.
Yeah, because before my lawyer sent off all this information to the Justice Department, she was requesting for all this information and all these documents and all these videos, and they won't release it to her, so she had to report to the Justice Department so they could come in and investigate the case so they could get all the documents and everything from the police department.
And okay, see, this is the disturbing thing about the NAACP, Michael. Okay, they have attorneys. They have attorneys on retainer. you know. And even if it's somebody who doesn't live in that area, you know, who doesn't want to do it, that's more familiar with the county, you know what I mean, get someone else in another county. You know, get somebody from Wake County, you know what I mean, to go in there and file a Freedom of Information Act request. You know, NAACP can do this. They have the resources and the wherewithal to be able to do this for the family. Okay, and they're not doing anything like that.
Absolutely, because I've contacted the local chapter and different ones, and they thought I had a problem by asking the chief of police to step down. I mean, it's just unbelievable. The local chapter of the Black Leadership Caucus, we did file a complaint with the Department of Justice, but we did get no support from the NAACP whatsoever in that endeavor. And it's just like you say, they have attorneys for this. So this is very, very confusing to me.
Well, you don't need a lawyer to file for Freedom of Information, is that correct?
No, you don't. No, you don't.
Mm-mm. That's
like
why
I
we
said.
Were able to file it, but you still need certain legal terms. You know, you still need it's good to have
an
attorney.
Probably you want an attorney to do it. Preferably you want an attorney to do it because they're going to have all the legal terminology necessary to present on the documentation so that, you know, if you have to sue them, you know, sue the agencies or what have you, you can do that. So, you know, preferably you want to have an attorney file it, but you don't need one. An attorney's not required to do that.
Absolutely. But it would be great, you know, to have an attorney look over it or something like that. But, no, we did not ours was not actually done by an attorney, no. No, it was not. But these families need justice, you know, no justice, no peace, and we're here for them. So,
Because, Freddie, where are you with your case and your son?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Where are you with your case and your son?
Well, at the moment, my son went in, went to court last the beginning of this month to try to get his bond reduced because they had it under a $1.5 million bond. They reduced it back in April to $600,000. Well, he went the beginning of this month to try to get it reduced again, and that's when they said they tried to give him a plea, and the plea was to take 144 to 208 months, which equals up to almost 12 to 16 years. And then they told him if he don't take the plea, they're going to turn it over to the feds, and then the feds will indict him on interstate charges. So right now my son is just sitting there hoping that he could sit on this plea that they offered him until the election year is over. And hopefully there'll be another DA or another judge that would take the case and maybe he could go in for another bond hearing then or get a better plea.
Well, first of all, how would the feds be able to indict him on an interstate case? Okay, it happened in the state of North Carolina, state charges. Okay, it's a state crime. Okay,
well,
now unless they kidnap somebody, held somebody hostage, or something like that, it then becomes a federal crime. Okay,
well,
but if they didn't do any of that, you know what I mean? They didn't hold anybody hostage. They went in, they robbed them, and left the place. How was it an interstate charge? I'm not understanding that.
Well, all right. First of all, They charged him. The charges is four counts of kidnapping. They charged him with four counts of kidnapping and one count of common law robbery. And the kidnapping charges is because they put the people in the walk-in cooler. Secondly,
okay.
The reason why the feds could step in is because Pizza Hut is an interstate business, and anytime you have a business that works, that operates from one state to another, it becomes a federal crime.
Yeah, but
I disagree with that one. I disagree with that. Now the kidnapping and putting folks in the freezer, the walk-in freezer, that they could definitely indict them on that. But this other business about because Pizza Hut has businesses outside of the state, that's nonsense.
That's right, because they're franchises, so they're not part of each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's
Yeah. Yeah, that's nonsense.
Every business in America is now, interstate crime.
Right. That's just to get him to do it.
He might be
better off going with the thing.
Yeah, he might be better. And I'll say, they might better check on the international status. So people that might file in overseas taxes.
Absolutely.
They might get an international.
That is just to coerce him into plea, so they don't have to have a trial then.
Yeah.
Right. So basically what they're trying to do, they're trying to shake my son up. They're just trying to shake him up to hurry up and take this plea. They're trying to scare him with this Fed stuff. So I told my son, I was like, just sit down there. I said, you've already been there about 10 months. Just sit down there and wait and be patient. Don't take the first plea you get. Don't be so hasty. The election year, this is an election year, so maybe you will get a better judge and a better DA, and you'll get a better sentence. So that's basically what he's doing now.
The problem now is this is North Carolina. That's the problem, and you might not get a better judge, especially if you do head over county. The problem is, though, that I don't believe that the person who is his lawyer needs help. Is there any way to speak to this lawyer? Because $600,000 for but not even having a gun is ludicrous.
Right. And see, what it is they believe that my nephew was involved in a couple other robberies, and they're trying to tie my son into those other robberies, which my son had alibis for all those robberies. And so that's the reason why they're trying to be so strong-arm on him, is because they believe he was involved in other robberies, which he wasn't. And as a parent, you always want to stick by your child, but in reality, I know for a fact that he wasn't involved in those other robberies.
And I believe exactly what he's saying, because for the fact that, they need to have that proof. I don't believe these young men were the only ones involved in those string of robberies. Based on information and belief, I believe that was an inside job, because when you look at those employees, if you were to see the tape, they look like it's a joke. They don't feel like they're even threatened. So I really believe it was an inside job, and all the truth in regards to this has not been exposed yet.
Hey,
and I do believe it.
If it was an inside job, Sonia, how come they didn't get no money? How inside was it that they didn't know the money was
just? See, no doubt they knew that they were going to hit. Well, if you know somebody going to hit you, you go and make a deposit. You make that deposit early if you know you're going to be hit. And I believe whoever was in the end, maybe somebody didn't get the cut of what they thought they were going to get, and that's when they blew the whistle. That's just my theory. And that's why there was no money there, because they probably knew it was going to be hit. Well, if you know you're going to be hit, you don't leave the money there. You're going to make the deposit early. But I do believe that it was an inside job. I don't believe these young men were the only ones involved in it. And I don't believe the truth. All those that were involved have been brought to justice. That's just opinion based on information and belief.
It sounds like they're going to be leaning on him to turn on all of the others.
Right, whoever
he might have information. But anyway, that's a whole separate.
Lindsay, I got some action. Can you tell us?
And can I say this? I'm confused why they keep saying these young men were armed, when if you look at, they were clearly not armed. And that's very confusing. They were unarmed when they exited the store, unarmed. And I just don't understand the DA's. At all.
But don't they have tape, Sonya, that says they show guns?
With the BB gun?
Well, they have – no, that's not in the – I'll be glad to pull you the DA's report. It's very confusing. See, if you understand Wilmington and what they're used to getting away with and how they've always manipulated African-Americans and decide, well, you know, it's like taking candy from a baby. You know, they'll calm down. Or in a lot of cases, a lot of them don't say anything. So that's why they're not used to –
Don't they show on the tape that they had a gun?
It doesn't show
not
on the tape.
Not when they exited the building.
Mrs. Smith.
Yes.
If you view the tape, it shows no gun.
There was
no gun
in either of the boys' hands when they exited the building.
No
gun.
We're talking about during the robbery.
That's what they're talking about.
During the robbery, yes. It did show the BB gun that my son had. It also showed the gun that Ronald had, which was a starter pistol, like a track starter pistol.
Okay. Well, it doesn't matter, though. You see, that's the armed robbery.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. If one has it, they all had it.
It's like if they were all doing drugs.
Now, the problem
yeah.
we have
whether the guns were real, authentic, or not, okay,
correct.
If the victims perceived the threat as being terrorized and as an actual armed robbery, that's what they're going to charge them with.
That's
yeah,
right.
And that's not the problem. That's not my worry because I don't condone nothing that they did, you know. My only thing is I want to seek justice for the wrongdoings of the shooting. These kids were not armed when they left the building. Yes, they
exactly.
were armed inside the building, but they weren't armed when they left the building, so they shouldn't have been subdued the way they were.
Absolutely.
That's the same thing
right.
with the shooting.
Right.
Even though they said he had shot a cop earlier, 3 days before, when they had to do something on
Right. Right, that's
excessive.
And what has
well, if it all went down the way that Mr. Smith and Sonia is describing it, it definitely appears that the police did not have probable cause to use that level of force. Okay, it seems to me like someone said earlier, halt, stop, police, freeze, get on the ground, or something like that would have been more appropriate, or even a lesser level of force, like perhaps a taser, or even some type of axe, a baton, or something. You know, they're kids. You know, these are young people. They didn't have weapons when they came out, you know? So, I mean, I just don't understand why they just took off shots, just immediately start shooting the kids. You know, I mean, it seems to me that they wanted to kill them. That was a plan, to kill them.
Right.
It is. Or most of the time they have the dogs on the scene, but they don't even release them and use them.
Mm.
Yeah.
And in the video, it showed from the time the boys exited the building, to the time the last shot, to the time my son came back in the building, it was, I think, Sonia, did we count 12 seconds?
It was so quick, it was unbelievable. There's no way.
The first kid exited the building. After he ran out the building, it was like one point some seconds before
seconds.
The first shot was fired.
Wow.
It wasn't even 2 seconds before the first shot was fired. So if he said, halt, stop, you know, freeze or whatever, he didn't have time to say all that and then start shooting.
Mm-mm.
Right.
No.
You can hear the gunshots in the video.
Right. Well, the thing is, the whole thing is we're not here to condone or condemn anything they did. But we're here to condemn the excessive
force
of the police department that does not seem to be even-handed with anybody.
Mm-hmm. No. Change that, Michael. Anybody of color. Anybody of color, sir. I mean, you got to just say it like it is. Just say it like it is.
Right.
How about this, Mike? Let's put it in perspective. Say the white Silver Spoon frat boys stole some golf and were racing them across the green that had been fueling oil. So they were running them up. And they went and shot him 24 times. Now, would that call an outrage? Would that be an investigation? Would that be something that somebody would be charged with? As opposed to this?
I think so. Yeah. So, well, the thing that all of this had in common, all these students, was that everybody was connected with someone else. The white female veteran, her boyfriend was black. The sheriff who died in police custody, his children were black. And Sonya's husband was black. Freddie's nephew and son were black. The autistic child that was chewed up by the dog was black. So there is a major problem here in New Hanover County that you are guilty yesterday.
Here's my sort of silent guilty law. They the cop, the guy who they called and killed their who shot their friend. And they go, oh, now, it happened. Now, where stepping in and writing the law. Because that's like saying, hey, here's how the team is. You got to see now what happened. And you've got to then have actual justice. So what we see in this case over and over again is that no matter what happens, whether you're blowing the side of a building or putting a kid in a hole without even charges against him for 2 years, nothing seems to happen. There is no criminal investigation,
right?
I mean, who's getting dismissed? Who's getting
okay?
Who's getting charged with a crime?
What I want to do is I want to make sure that we start to shed a big light on these crimes in New Hanover County. Who is the police chief in New Hanover County, Sonya?
The chief of police is Ralph Evangelist. He's held that position for the last decade. And these incidents, these excessive force incidents have only come to light as of October the 13th, which first started with Mr. Brandon Smith. And they tried to label him as some gang member, which was crazy because he was married and a lone showman. And, excuse me. And he has a nine-year-old son, yes, children, a nine-year-old son who's still fighting leukemia. So,
a longshoreman who was a gangbanger. Are you kidding me? I mean, depending upon what part of the world he was shipping out to, I mean, he's gone 45 to 90 days of the damn year. I mean, you got to be kidding me, man. Come on. This is ridiculous.
It is. And these last incidents have happened since October of 2013. Up until that point, no forms of excessive force was brought to light until October of 2013 to present. And that's when we have all these. This is technically six incidents, and five of them have resulted in fatalities to death. So, and it's really. She never had these issues until October of 2013, and Chief Evangelist has been for the last 10 years in Texas.
If someone has a radio on or the internet on, please just turn it off because we're getting feedback.
But I hope.
Well, Michael Lawson was talking about this the other day. Not to cut you off, Sonya, but Michael Lawson was talking about this the other day during a conversation. It appears that since the Democratic Party in the state of North Carolina has taken over both the House and the Senate, it appears that a lot of these racial cases are starting to, like, emerge all over the state, you know, and in particular, towns that have historical racial connotations.
That's the Republican Party, not Democratic Party.
Republican Party. I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean Democratic Party. I meant to say Republican Party. You know, and it just seems like, you know, it seems like these little subtle, these little racial incidents were there all along. They were just subtle. And now that they've gotten there and they've positioned themselves where they've changed certain legislation to suit their, you know, their interests, like they changed the attorney general's authority where he can't, you know, he doesn't have as much power as he used to. He can't enact certain laws and everything. You know, it seems like these towns where you got these sheriffs and these one-horse towns, you know, they've become more brazen and more bold, you know, and Wilmington certainly fits that bill. You know, so does Franklin County. You know what I mean? The towns of Franklin County, like what is it down there, like Lewisburg and where did that kid get killed? Youngsville, you know, places like this, you know, where you're starting to have these cops starting to do all kinds of crazy stuff, and it doesn't make national media because the people who live there, the African Americans and people of color who live in these communities, are so terrified to say anything. You know?
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely, you hit it right on the head. They are.
You know, everybody's terrified. Everybody's running with that. Well, I gotta live around here. You know, I mean, come on. I mean, why live there? If you know these kinds of things are going on, why even live there?
Absolutely.
You know, I blog about these stories all the time, and people say to me, you know, it's like, what's the young girl's name that works at Al Sharpton's group? Michael, Rosa Garvin. Yeah, she raised a great question. She works for the Charlotte-based National Action Network for Al Sharpton's group. And she raises a tremendous question. Why do you live in these kind of areas where you know that there's known racism, you got racial activities? Why live there? I don't understand that. If you're not going to go out and vote, you're not going to go and get your politicians to rally for the people of color in your community, or you're not going to make certain that a person who's a police chief is going to be working to assist the interests of people of color in that particular municipality, why live there? I just don't understand that.
Well, the only reason I'm here, because I can trace my history back to the late 1800s, I'm the great-granddaughter of former slaves. I'm here to make a change and make a difference. And I hope that I just can't sit here and do nothing.
No, Sonia, you can't do it by yourself if nobody wants to help you.
I'm sorry?
You can't do it by yourself if nobody wants to help you.
Yeah, he says you can't do it by yourself if you don't have any help.
I have help. It may not be the people that are in the people that are doing this injustice. I'm definitely not getting help from the Wilmington Police Department or the Sheriff's Department, and or maybe not even the DA's department. But somebody has to speak truth to power, and this is how our foreparents went through the same thing through the Civil Rights Movement. They were in situations. When King did his movement, everybody didn't agree with what King did. Everybody didn't agree with Mandela. But you have to speak truth to power wherever you go.
The problem is in New Hanover County, the entire political structure don't give a damn. So what do you do then when the people who make the laws don't care?
And that's a very good question. But it's been like that ever since they brought us here on a slave ship. It used to be like that in the whole United States. But you had people like W.E. Du Bois and Marcus Garvey. You had these foreparents before it spoke truth to power. And in some areas, it's still stronger than others. You have to speak it because it's never been spoken before. But at the end of the day, you have people that is part of the struggle of the African-American in the United States, not only New Hanover County, but across the nation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree with you, Sonia. I agree with you, Sonia, because, you know, we were talking about Brandon's case the other day. It's no way in the world, you know, the cops can kill, because I understand they shot and killed this guy in broad daylight. Okay, there's no way in the world a cop can shoot and kill a black man, okay, in broad daylight in Philadelphia or Newark, New Jersey, or Manhattan or Brooklyn or Queens. You know, that will not happen because they would march on town hall. I mean, it would be a riot. They'd need the National Guard. You know what I mean? 27 times? Are you kidding me? You know,
it was in a residential area where it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they should be living. I mean, the people within that community should be outraged to the point where, you know, the town council is calling some kind of special session to find out how they're going to deal with it.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's just crazy, man. I just can't understand the apathy, you know, the lack of proactiveness to help yourself.
At least when they shot Abner Luena, it was at night.
Yeah.
They shot during the day.
Yeah, they shot. That's what I can't get with Brandon. They shot a broad daylight. I don't mean to laugh about it, but I mean, I just can't fathom that happening in a major city. You know, I just can't fathom that happening.
And the sheriff is up for re-election. And when I brought this situation to light, I got a lot of ridicule from the local Democratic Party here in New Hanover County. I got a lot of criticism for speaking out from some of the ministers here. And it's just like you say, they are scared. But I'm not scared.
Why would they scared? What's it going to do?
They're scared of getting shot 20-some times in the back.
Oh, is that right?
You're right, Thomas.
Man. I mean, it's unbelievable. It is just mind-boggling to me. And you would think, you know, I have to not look at those that do not support us. I have to look to those that do support us and notice.
So
I thank y'all for giving us airtime here, because the local radio stations wouldn't touch it. The local TV stations are a little different, you know, but the local radio stations that are hosted by African Americans are programmed. They are Uncle Ruckus's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in that, that's why I call them Uncle Ruckus. That's what
mm-hmm.
they are.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to call it what it is. You're talking about Uncle Tom, okay?
Yes.
That's the appropriate term that
now,
we
Uncle
call,
Tom,
you know.
Uncle
Tom.
We need justice for these families. And they don't touch anything unless they're going to, you know, and I hate to go here, unless it's some money into them. So they feel like these people in political power, you know, they're just sold out. That's the only word for it.
Times is the owner of the local newspaper down here. Is that correct?
Wilmington did run some articles in support of the family. Now, the NNPA is not like that in New Hanover County. I can say that for the Wilmington Journal, that did advocate for the Pardon of Innocence for the Wilmington 10. They have...
It's 10. I'm talking about the newspaper down there. They are owned by the New York Times. Is that correct?
Oh, you're talking about the Wilmington Star. Yes, it is. The white newspaper, yes.
That's a Hearst publication. That's a Hearst publication, if you know about the Times. I mean, New York Times.
Okay, so we have just a 2 minutes left. I want to tie it up. First, you mentioned we're going to try to air this every week so it gets out there. And ready for the same thing with you, and air these whole shenanigans that's going on down there in New Hanover County, that people need to know, hey, yes, by the water, but so what? You can get shot just driving through town if you're African American. So but we also need to have Sonia. What else can be said? We need to have some more information from you, so I can put it on the website, or David can put it on the website, so we can get, because they need lawyers. Both of you need a lawyer to handle these cases.
One that doesn't run.
Because this is just completely outrageous. And what is the gentleman whose girlfriend was killed, what is he doing? Anybody know?
They are so devastated. Whole incident. I mean, a lot of the family of the victims, they won't even talk about it. They're just absolutely devastated by the whole incident. But I believe the mother of the victim has a lawyer. Of Grace Thinks, their mother does have an attorney.
And
And the Smith case is I think it's a lot going to come out of that particular case. For them to identify him as a white female, and Mr. Brandon Smith has African features. There's no way anybody in the world can mistake him for someone white. That's just how poorly done that autopsy was. And we all know autopsies have a lot of forensic information that can help bring out a lot of truths in any case. So,
okay. All right. Well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to speak to Sonia, have you come on the show next week to give us an update. And Lindsay and Freddie, you both have, if you don't have my email address, please get them from Sonia. So
okay.
I can.
And also
about,
in the and can I mention this, Mr. Lawson, about the 1898? Can I briefly mention about the resolution?
Go ahead.
You're right ahead.
Go ahead.
The 1898 massacre was instigated by the Democratic Party. They also passed laws to stop African Americans from voting during that time, up until the Civil Rights Movement with the Voting Act of 1965. Now, at present, there is a resolution that is asking the General Assembly to draw up a bill to give these descendants compensation, because I think it's unjust to have these programs out here and not have given any compensation to the descendants. And these families, and especially when they gave compensation to the slave owners after the Civil War. So we hope that the descendants of the 1898 massacre, and some of them are still in Wilmington, will get some type of compensation in this. And there is a resolution that the Democratic Party is going to vote on this in this year.
Okay. Well, hey, you know where that's going? Nowhere. So it's the Republicans own the Congress.
Yeah. When we get a
so
new
that's,
Congress.
And that may be because I'm finding out there's no difference between the two parties at all.
Well,
they have a lot of
clarity. There is a hell of a difference now. But the problem is it ain't going to happen because the Republicans own the Congress. They own the Senate, the House, and the governor.
And
so
you can be very the resolution did pass the local chapter of New Hanover County in two districts. When it went to the state, it mysteriously got pulled out. So you could be very right on that.
That's what I just said. That's, in 1898, the Democratic Party was a racist party. The Republican
absolutely.
Was so, you know, hey. That's the story.
And that's what civil rights, they all stand to the Republicans.
And
right.
That's the, so,
there are more Democrats in New Hanover County than there are Republicans. So,
well, yeah, I don't vote that way. But, all right, so we can go. At the end of the year, we got no more time left. I will get in touch with everybody, Lindsay and Freddie and Sonia. I will get in contact with you. I want to put this on my website, so I need a lot more details, a lot more information from the local newspapers so I can put it on our website. I know David's all up and down on this right now, so we don't have to worry about that. But we need to see how we can get a lawyer for Lindsay and for Freddie because of the shooting. Not because what preceded it, because of the shooting.
Right.
And for the future. So I want to thank everybody, Sonia and David, you stay there. Sonia and Freddie and Lindsay, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. And we will be talking with you. And just keep the faith.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
Okay. Good. Look, I want to just say something real quick as we wrap this up. One of the things that we can do to help prevent this and change the course of it, because we're talking about places like New Orleans and L.A., where there is endemic corruption and racism. The only way it changes sometimes is citizen activism, but also we have tools now. We can be video vigilantes. You know, what changed in L.A. was seen on CNN when they were beating. That's what they can't deny. We need to be out there in force, paying attention. You know that whole thing of who watches the watchers? That type of thing. They need to be out there filming these policemen, doing everything they can. The Supreme Court's already ruled that you can't pay you, but it will stop the abuses because they can only do it in the dark. They can only do it when nobody's watching. And you can't record video. So, Zach,
all right. I want to thank you guys. David Holland, just a minute. Thank you, Sonia. Thank you, Freddie. Thank you, Lindsay. We'll be talking to you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. David.
Yeah, Michael.
I mean, well, what's going on in this daggone state of North Carolina? I mean, they can't.
I don't know, man. I think, you know, our discussion the other day when you talk about how the Republicans have gained so much political power within the last 4 years or so. It's just incredible. The turnaround, I mean, after 120-something years of Democratic rule, I knew that once they, you know, you would think that once they obtained power, that they would come back in a big way. But you would never think that these kinds of racial incidents would just emerge and rear their ugly heads so blatantly like this. You know, we know that the standard for the way a law enforcement officer interacts or treats a black subject as opposed to his white counterparts is different. The rule book is written totally different. Okay, because you know, there's a lot of rumors that you know they're taught at the training academy that if you catch a black guy in the alley, that's the perfect time to you know, fire a couple of hot ones. You know what I mean? So I mean, we've been known for years that you know, whatever's going to happen with us is going to be different. It depends on who's at the scene, what they can prove, and what we can prove. You know what I mean? And you know, the one thing with the kids. With robbing the Pizza Hut, that's going to be a tough one because there are a lot of people out there going to say, well, they're animals. They were trying to rob the place. They got what they deserve, you know. But that's not necessarily true because the kids came out unarmed, you know.
Right.
And what justified that level of force?
Nothing.
Okay.
And
you know, and in the Brandon Smith case, God, I mean, I don't know why the Department of Justice isn't all over that. Where in America can you shoot a man? I don't care whether he's black, white, green, purple, or blue. 27 times, and the guy's laying on the ground, okay, and the only thing the guy has in his possession is a cell phone, okay? Where in America is that justified by a district attorney's office? Where?
Well, but look, they did that right in the middle of New York City with that poor guy trying to reach for his ID.
That's right.
So it can happen anywhere, but what happens afterwards is what's important.
Okay, we got 2 minutes, and I need to say this. I want everybody who's listening who's in the Charlotte, North Carolina, any place else, you're welcome. Saturday, August 16th, from 10 to 2 p.m. at the Parish Life Center of Our Lady at Constellation Catholic Church, we are having a voter education seminar.
Education's important.
Because education is important. And we're going to teach you how to vote by absentee ballot. Because you know what? If you need a voter ID, if they're going to make you stand in line in the rain, if they're going to make you get up and travel 35 miles to go vote one way, you can beat them at their own game by voting absentee. So we're having that, and our guest speaker is going to be Dr. Ben Chavis. I want everybody to come out. That's Our Lady of the Constellation Catholic Church on Statesville Avenue in Charlotte, North Carolina. One other thing. We are having Blue Magic as our first guest of our, I guess it would be our fall campaign for voter education. Saturday, September 6th, 2014. We will be talking about that more as it approaches, but it's going to be at the Neighborhood Theater in Charlotte, North Carolina, 511 East 36th Street in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the doors will be open at 7:30. But if you want a VIP seat, you can turn in between 6:30 and 7:30.
And the tickets will be $55, which include an open bar and autographed copy of Blue Magic DCD. So please listen. Well, I want to thank you, David, and I want to thank all our guests, Sonia and Freddie and Lindsay and Mike Levins and Mark Freeland. I'm telling you, it gets worse and worse. As Albert Einstein said, in the matter of truth and justice, there is no difference between large and small problems. For issues concerning the treatment of people are all the same.
Hey, Mike, that's where I'm a positive person. I think it gets worse and worse. I think it gets better and better.
Yep.
Because, you know why? We're connected and we're talking about it. Used to what happened in Hanover County stayed
yep.
there. And when they abused people, nobody heard about it.
That's
now
right.
everybody can hear
now
about it. And we can stop it.
Okay, we're out of here. Have a good weekend, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend, guys.